This is a free question and answer. You have to tell me when it gets about 3:20. Okay. Free question and answer. Somebody asked me yesterday, I don't know if the gentleman's still here. I'm not sure if it was you, but about the length of the time of the schism. And I checked the books. It does say 24 hours. So I don't know. All the texts say 24 hours. So, you know, that's in Tibet, that's what they understood. And it can't last more than 24 hours because of the extraordinary virtue of the two main disciples, and that one of them always patches things up before the end of 24-hour period. So, but I didn't really go back and look in all the old sutras and stuff. That's all the Tibetan scriptures say that. Okay. Yeah?
If you say that when we get sick, it's ripening of karma, and it's...
Could be. Could be. Not the same. I think he's talking about a practice where you take something bad and decide to make something good out of it. You see, I mean, I would say that's where a bad karma has ripened, a really bad karma, and you get sick, and then you decide, well, I'm going to be sick anyway, so I might as well imagine that I'm taking on the pain of other people or something like that. And then in this other thing, the good karma of studying emptiness actually destroys or lessens the old bad karma, and then it ripens on you earlier. So that's a big difference, I think. That's a big difference. One is imagining that it's a good thing, and the other is actually accelerating the bad karma so that it comes quicker and much smaller. So I think it's a different practice. It doesn't mean that when you accelerate it and you get a bad cold, you can still turn that into a lojo also. You can still turn that into an opportunity. So you can do both at the same time. Yeah?
Does somebody hear you?
Yeah?
Actually, the person that fired that come
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, good question. Let's say somebody's sick and then they meditate to get over that, or they do some practice to get over that. Or let's say you pray to Amitabha or Long Life Medicine Buddha or something like that, and then you get better. That's a very interesting thing. The karma of getting better was caused by your faith in the Medicine Buddha. And it's not coming from the Medicine Buddha. Okay? So it's not like Medicine Buddha can come and cure people. If that was possible, the Medicine Buddha would cure everybody. And you wouldn't have to ask Medicine Buddha to cure everybody. You see? We don't believe like Christian idea that you have to ask them and only then will they cure you. You see what I mean? They love everybody. They want to help everybody. If they have the power to cure anybody, of course they would do it before you ask. You don't have to ask, okay? But they don't have that power. A Buddha doesn't have that power. But sometimes if you pray to Amitabha or Medicine Buddha, you get better. That's because the good karma of the prayer makes you better. You see, to believe in them makes you better. But not they can't from their side make you better. If they could, then no one would ever get sick, you know? Yeah. Both. Okay, it could be either one. It could be three things. Okay, number one, your old bad karma wore out. Okay, number two, your old good karma started to cure you. Number three, your new good karma from believing in them cures you, and it could be any combination of them like that. But what it's not, and I think it's important in Buddhism to say it's not Medicine Buddha is curing you because you asked them. Because if they could cure you, they would cure you. They would cure everybody. Nobody would get sick. You see, it's not like some religion where Medicine Buddha will help only Buddhists and won't help Hindus or something like that. It's not like that. You know what I mean? If they could cure you, they would cure you. They can't. Okay. Yeah. I didn't catch the last one. That's a good question. Temporary insanity, they call it, right? You mean like that? Or what karma makes you mentally ill? Oh, yeah. Good. What kind of karma is responsible for mental illness like that? We translated a text called, it's been translated as Wheel of Sharp Weapons. We translated it as Crown of Knives or something like that. But in there, they give all the connections between bad karma and being having mental illness. And I would say all three of the mental ones, you know, being unhappy when other people get good things, being happy when people get bad things, and then just entertaining wrong views in general. Okay. But specifically in the scriptures, a lot of times they speak about if you've had any kind of secret initiations or tantric initiations, that if you broke your vows regarding those, like you showed things to other people that you weren't supposed to teach to other people, or especially bad behavior towards your lama, then that can cause mental illness. But I would say mainly being happy about other people's problems, which means if you wanted to get rid of it, you should be careful not to do that. You should try to catch yourself when you do it. And oh, that's another question. Okay. I'm saying if you're out of it enough to recognize that you are mentally ill, then you should do that. Otherwise, you have to do basic virtues, you know, keep the 10 virtues to the point where you can recognize that you're mentally ill. Then you get enough good karma that you recognize what your true illnesses are. You see what I mean? So those are two different karmas, I think. You know what I mean? Yeah. I'm going to try to pick on people that I might not see for a while. Yeah.
Or Pol Pot or any of those people. What do you
situations?
Yeah, that's a difficult question, okay? I think, what are you doing if it takes force to stop someone who's really hurting other people? There's a bunch of answers here, okay? I'll throw out some of them. And I always give the example of somebody being mugged on the street. Somebody's being hurt on the street. And you can see this guy is hitting this woman, you know, and hitting her. This happened to me. I was with one of my lamas, and we saw this. And what do? You know, in the scripture, you're supposed to stop and try to help them, okay? Now, if they have the karma to be helped, you will succeed. If they don't have the karma to be helped, you will fail. You might, in addition, have the karma to be stabbed by the mugger while you're trying to help them, okay? And whether you go to help or not, they will be saved or not, depending on their karma. See, if you just stand there and they have the karma to be saved, somebody else will save them. You see what I mean? So that might sound like you're not supposed to do anything. You see what I mean? But your bodhisattva vows say, you must go to their aid. You must assist them. Why? Is it because you can stop the mugger? It's very interesting. We say no. It's because your karma of compassionately attempting to help them will make you a Buddha faster, and then you can help more people. But to live your life on that basis is really difficult. You know what I mean? And you get depressed if you go and try to help someone and it doesn't work. But really, you've already collected the main karma involved, which is that you're going to become a Buddha faster. Okay. There was something else in there. What was that? Is there a just war? That's a tough one. Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, in the Bodhisattva vows, you are allowed, under extraordinary circumstances, to break the first 7 of the 10 bad deeds. Like, if someone runs into your house and they're being chased by somebody, this is the example in China, and they're trying to murder them, and then you hide them in your closet, and you go to the front door, and the guy has a knife, and he's hiding it behind his back, and he says, "Did you see this guy?" And you're required by your vows to say, "No, I didn't see this guy." So you're required on that basis. Think about, you know, violence or any kind of, you're under certain circumstances, you're required to use strength, power to stop this person. But again, the scriptures are, you have to behave as if that person that you're trying to stop was your mother, and you came home one night, and you came into the kitchen, and your mother said, "Good afternoon, you know, John, have a good day at work." And she pulls a steak knife out of the drawer and comes at you. And then, you know, how would you defend yourself? You know, would you trip her or jump on her or would you shoot her? You see what I mean? And they say that the general frame of mind you have to be in is that this person is my mother. And if my mother were killing Kuwaitis, you know, then how would I stop her? You know, maybe you could find a better way than killing her, you know. In other words, that the motivation would be 100% driven by perceiving them as your own mother. And I think that most political wars could be solved by, you know, boycotts. I mean, really strict boycotts or serious boycotts or serious economic moves or other kinds of, other than physical violence, okay? Now, on a deeper level, okay, this is very difficult. If an army attacks you, if someone threatens you with a gun, and you have a choice to shoot them back. Now, I'm talking on a very deep level. I don't know if anyone can do it, okay? I can't do it. But anyway, someone's going to shoot a gun at you, and you have a gun. Strictly speaking, as far as I understand it, the guy is standing there and about to shoot you because you have the karma to be shot. Now, you have a choice to either get shot or to collect a new bad karma yourself of shooting someone else. And if you were really a logician, okay, then you would just get shot and not shoot the person back. But that's very hard. And And the violence of shooting back is that they will shoot you again many times. You see what I mean? So really the most intelligent thing to do for yourself is not to do violence under any circumstances, but it's very hard to do. It's really hard to do. One more statement about that. King Udayana was being chased by assassins sent by his son. He was already an arhat. He knew that if the assassin did, then because of the Magla Sope Dunjik Tir, because it's a common effort, that his son would collect the karma, two of the top five karmas, you know, killing a father and killing an arhat. So out of compassion for his son, he attempted to use miracles and escape. But they didn't work. Okay. But anyway, there is a case recorded in scripture where Lord Buddha murdered a person that he knew otherwise would murder 500 people, out of compassion for that person, not for the 500 people. Okay. It's very interesting. Those are all difficult questions. But those are all my thoughts on it. If I had the strength, I would just sit there and get shot because that's not a bad karma. That's using up a bad karma. And by shooting back in anger, then you will be shot many more times. But it's very hard to live that way. Someone who doesn't want to go use it, yeah. That's one of the strong indications, let's say that.
Well, I think, as far as I understand it, that the proof would also prove that a virtue wouldn't get you always a positive result.
Apparently, yeah.
If I'm constantly doing nice motivation,
that's a pretty good idea. Not every time you tell them to not get fired. The apparent cause and effect is not the effect. In either case, has that. We would say that. Well, let's not use the proof. In the case of the lie and the money, you are expecting the lie to create. You believe that the lie creates the money, but when you do a virtue lie, the truth to the boss, it's not with the belief that the boss is say, oh, you told the truth, that's okay. Here, have a raise. You know what I mean? We never said that. The Buddhist never said that. We said by telling the truth, then that's a karmic people. That always works. That never fails. On a parent level, it's gonna, you know, if somebody got up immediately, that's not a Buddhist teaching. You can't say that. Telling the truth doesn't work in the in the apparent short run. Okay, but that doesn't mean that it doesn't.
Will, it actually is.
Yeah, that's a whole different question. Two ways to prove it. Yeah, two ways. Two ways to prove. Well, let's say three ways. Okay. Let's say 1,000 ways. Rigvatayeva means billions of ways. But anyway, let's say I'll give you a couple of indications, okay? One is the, and Jesus, an analogy of the natural. Wait for watermelons. You see, I mean, there's a similarity between the seed and the result. Seed is pain, negativity, hurting. Then the result is something which is for a Westerner and for most people in the desire realm, it doesn't seem convincing to say that. But really, on a farming level, you follow that rule. You see, on an agricultural level, people accept that. But then on a spiritual level or an emotional level, people are a little hesitant to say, if the content of the action is negative or hurting someone, then the content of the consequences think that's a very profound statement, but it's too simple for us. So anyway, that's one indication. Second is what we call a lunatic. Doesn't get better. That's a second way to confirm it. I mean, those are both acceptable to a Buddhist. I had a third one for you. Oh, yeah. That can only be a proof if you can establish the Lord Buddha doesn't. I mean, like saying so, only technically speaking, in Buddhist logic, you're only allowed to be speaking to. Lord Buddha can't lie. And if that's what the Lord Buddha said. If you can unauthoritative all the time. You know, saying that Buddhist just because the lie in public doesn't make it Lord Buddha's speech. Okay? Establishing that the Buddha probably won't probably find the truth. And school, and my parents, and you know, death, and I open up this book, you know, just a really lousy translation of a story, you know. The description of my situation was so accurate that I was compelled to think that the person was probably correct on the solution. You see, and that's the big selling point for Lord Buddha's veracity, is that he describes, you can confirm through painful personal experience. Is so false. That's all. That's all. Anyway. lot of habits. Results. One of them is that you tend to carry the habit or the act in certain ways from your past karma. I think they would say a couple of things. I think one is some of those karmas might be older than most recent. You see, I mean, the engine today takes you into your next and the details of your life. Being lightning from probably. You know what I mean? Might be because they were pure in their very life. Some in this room might be human. They took the 500 births as a dog. Now the good karma is surfacing by default. You see what I mean? And both are possible. So I literal and for confirming that, I think we just have to sit down. If that's I probably do the terrible ones, makes sense. And the second are described as infinitely more intelligent. So, I mean, he begged them, you know, he was begging them to, you know, and if you're sitting Lord Buddha's advice. My question, I keep asking, because then Lord Buddha will open up. With faith, you know, and then, but never do it. Never do the other way, you know, because then you just sort of. But I. so that there are. It's impossible. Don't believe it. I cannot. And then there's only it's perfect, it's beautiful. The fact that people say lines on me. Have you seen that? Do you know? Would you know how when you see someone? You know what I mean? And okay, it's okay. Fishy. Fishy. You know what I mean? But yeah, for example, hungry ghosts, things like that, you are not allowed as a Buddhist to say they exist definitively. You can't say they exist, you know. Yeah, I don't know. Good explanation. You will fall prey to unauthentic people, and you have to be very demanding. It's your mental real estate. It's your billion lives ahead of you. You know, you're the one. They always make a joke. Nagarjuna said, you know, Lama, something. powers. He translated a lot of it's 10 times more powerful than powers within the sophist. Okay? Then the four powers by itself are not nearly as powerful as if you use Vajrasattva practice together with it. The same thing holds practice of being, giving, and taking. If you do it with if you combine that with a tantric and the four powers are very good to start with as a foundation, and when you meet a qualified lama, who can explain you properly, and who can guide you through the practice, and who can give you the pledges and vows that are related with that practice, then you should certainly take that by yourself initiation or by the if you take a good initiation. That says it that way. What I'm not as good as you. Okay. He's a All-American lacrosse player, so I like to throw things out of him. It's just fun. Sometimes I got it mad. Okay, anyway. We talked about that this is just a black cylinder. You see it as a pen because you have karma in your mind to see it as a pen. That's the only reason. There's no pen out here. That's what the Heart Sutra means. No pens, no blackboard, no roof, no you. That's what he's talking about. It's not a pen. You're seeing a pen because something in your mind makes you see pen. And it could have just as well been Vajra Pani's Vajra, you know what I mean? And you could see me as the sky, you know? But you don't have that karma. What's very, very interesting is that thoughts are the same. The thoughts you hear going around in your mind are also like this black cylinder. If you had had better karma, your mind would be interpreting them as omniscience. And it therefore would be omniscience. You see what I mean? It's very important to understand that your thoughts are as empty as physical objects. You know, did it ever occur to you that there's two people in your head? There's one listening to everything, and there's one talking. And the mind-only school says, yeah, you're really good at listening and talking at the same time. And Madhyamika says, come on, the talker must come before the listener. You know what I mean? We don't accept what we call rangrik, or the perception of the mind in a single moment of itself. The mind is always 1 second behind. Abhidharma agrees, and the higher schools agree, that your mind is always one moment behind. It's like those stars. You see a star, the actual star itself has died out already, but the light is just reaching this planet, and it looks like the star is still there. You're always like that. You're always 1 millisecond behind. And you're always listening to something else. The something else is a bunch of random noises, and then your present mind has the karma to hear them as good thoughts, lousy thoughts, depression, low self-esteem, happiness, you know what I mean? Depending on your karma. It's very interesting. Your karma determines whether you see a pen or not. And your karma determines whether you hear something sweet in your mind all morning or not. Okay? It's very interesting. Why did I get onto that? That's the emptiness of your mind. So that's the great potential. Now, as far as bodhicitta, it's the same thing. We all have that potential, but it's not that you have it in you. If you're in the desire realm, you probably have something almost opposite. Okay? No, you have this strong self-cherishing. You have this strong belief. And by the way, just to give you a taste of how to correct that, it's based on the misperception, on the mistaken belief that what I call me is not empty. Okay? You decide what's a pen because of your past karma. You decide what's a good thought because of your past karma. And your past karma also dictates what you think is you. Your past karma is forcing you to believe that me ends here and she starts there. It's not natural. It's not God-given. Nothing is. Everything's empty. Everything's fluid. Your past karma is forcing you to believe that she starts there and I start here. And that's just another convention. If you had different karma, you would truly treat this person 100% as you treat yourself. And you wouldn't say, my skin ends here, her skin starts there, so this skin should get fed first. You see, I mean, you wouldn't say that. If you had different karma, like when a mother has a baby, suddenly the sense of me envelops another being. You see what I mean? And they're more concerned, they have almost equal concern that the two mouths get food and put into them. You see what I mean? And I give the other example that when diabetics get really sick and they get gangrene on their foot, and then I've watched this happen with several friends. And the doctor says, you have to cut the knee. It cuts off the knee because it might have spread. Yeah, they say they have to go with the knee. And then they always say, and it starts to get off green, and then they say, go ahead, cut it. At that moment, their sense of knee has just shortened by about 2 feet. You know what I mean? Mentally, the knee has shrunk. So you can shrink the me, and you can expand the me. And what you consider me is just a convention forced on you by your past karma. So at least if you know that, there's the potential for bodhicitta. Because later you just voluntarily and knowingly expand yourself to include another person. And we do this practice among some of the students in New York, like where you just decide another person is going to be you, and you eat together. You actually fork the food into, there's a couple of people doing that, and it's a very interesting practice. It's like, I refuse to accept my old definition of me. And it's very good for developing bodhicitta. Okay. Like that. Okay. Yeah. I hate this question. I'll tell you how a real Madhyamikan would answer it. You do have free will, and that's also forced on you by your past karma. Okay? No, and I'm not joking. You do have a power right now to keep your book. If you do keep your book, you will be happier next year. You will be surrounded by better and better people. And that is your decision to do that, and you have free will to do that or not to do that. If you choose to do it, that's is a projection of past karma. And there's no contradiction there. I mean, real Madhyamika is pretty hard. Real Madhyamika is pretty tough. Lower schools, even as close as the lower Madhyamika school called Svatantrika, okay? They slip up because when they get to something like free will, they drop the ball on setting. They get the free will and they start thinking about it as self-existent. You see what I mean? And that's where they... I'll give you an example. In the lower Madhyamika school, you can say in a way that you know, they don't have such a problem with this thing doesn't exist from its own side. You can try to take it and get them to participate in it. That's the idea. Why do things function? Then they drop the ball. Then they say, no, that's inherent. I'm not thinking. You know, it would like if I was doing now. That's what they're talking about. You might think about it crazy. You probably think about it crazy. They can handle it as far as, you know, nice, solid, you know, still objects that don't move too much. But as soon as you get into, you know, why does the pen work? And they say, no, that's inherent in the pen. That's not my... The sun doesn't come up because of my karma. Are you telling me that this ball of light comes up in the morning because 5 billion people have the same karma? Yeah. Okay. They say, come on, that's too much, man. I can't take that. You know, they drop it there. And when you get to something like free will, they drop it. They say free will or the... They say... which is the guy who hears the thoughts, okay? That can't be a own mind. That has to be inherently existing. That has to be coming from its own side. If free will existed, it has to be coming from its own side. It couldn't be a projection forced on me by my past karma, because it's free will. Okay? I mean, it's a very subtle thing. That's what you want to do in my unique school. And you have to chew on it. Okay. Don't drop the ball when you get to thoughts. Don't drop the ball when you get to your own perception of your own thoughts. That also is projection. The fact that you're hearing your thoughts is projection. That's also being forced on you by karma. And that's not a proof of why it doesn't. That's not a proof of why free will doesn't exist. It's a proof of why free will does exist. And you got it.
Change and a shift to do good versus bad.
Yeah, you have to have Abhidhamma. What's Abhidhamma? Higher knowledge, which is defined as, you know, the ability to distinguish between this is right, this is wrong, this is good, this is bad, this will help me, this won't. Yeah.
Is that free will?
Yeah, it's free will. But it's a projection. Then there's no problem there. You see, Nagarjuna's thing, just as possible, like his mantra, you know, you have to have his mantra. Yeah. It's a projection.
should, therefore, it's true. Okay? He's not even saying, give me three ways here. Here's the two ways. Perfection, therefore, it's false. It's perfection, therefore, it's not free will. And then, if you recognize now, the Jeffrey Cobble one. God damn it, free will because of rejection. Okay? and you have, it's very difficult to get it. It's very difficult to get it. It's only real because of rejection. It's only because it's an omission. I don't see it too often. Of the what? It does help to prevent pride when you're helping other people. I mean, that's a side issue, but...
How is it there? Good karma? Why is it
good karma? Well, let's distinguish. It's a ripening of their old good karma that you were able to intervene successfully. Okay? For you, it's primarily a new good karma that you have tried and successfully intervened. And then in the future, you're going to have a good result of that karma. And then if you're a Buddhist who's interested in helping people, it's partly your good karma from the past that you get to enjoy yourself succeeding in helping other people. Okay? But, now this is very important. I always think of the movie Gandhi. I love Gandhi's story. I watch it over and over. You know, I drag the kids in our kids' class. They have to watch it like 3 times. They're like, I don't want to see it anymore. I'm like, come on. You know, and here's... Mahatma Gandhi is burning his draft card or his alien identity card. What do they call it? Non-white card, you know? And he's reaching out to the garbage can and he's lighting it. And this, you know, constable standing there and saying, if you move one more inch, I'm going to break your arm, you know? So what does he do? He goes and he just got... lays it on his arm, and this is a true story, you know, and just smashes his arm, you know. And you see, we would say, oh, he failed, you know what I mean? We would feel bad. We'd say, oh, no, I broke my arm, I'm stupid, I shouldn't go to demonstrations anymore. Actually, that's an act of truth, and he's very good at such a great, you know, that's an act of truth. Why? He understood reality perfectly. It's because his arm broken, it's because something bad. Upset about him, okay? But by willing to have his arm broken to do something true and right, regardless of the apparent consequence, he still happened to do it. I mean, all this happened. You try to meditate, you try to help other people, you try to do the right thing. What happens back to you is not at all connected to what you're doing, and you've got to know that. Maybe crap will come back to you. Maybe people will give you a medal. Maybe people will just... but you did the right thing, you know, and your future karma is perfect. See, I mean, so that prevents... Master Shantideva says, prevents pride from being able to help other people, and it prevents being depressed when you can't help other people. Because either way, you did the very best. Whether it's experience, it's up to your effort. Doesn't depend... So reach out, do the right thing, burn that garbage, and okay. It kind of teaches you to be honest and good all the time, regardless of other people. You see what I mean? Because if you do the right thing, sometimes people will question you, sometimes people will curse you, and people will ignore you. And you have to be, it helps your mental afflictions if you just know that, and you just... what they're doing to you is not a result of what you're doing. That's just a result of the karma. Then you don't get upset when people don't agree with you. You have to when people say, oh, you're good luck by the city of cards. And later they say, you know it's right. And that, knowing that the results that come to you are determined by old karma, then you can be happy. Gandhi sitting there with his broken arm with his kids jumping up in the next movie, like, haha. And this is, he knows it's the right thing. Regardless of the extent. How are we doing? 3:10. We got about 10 more minutes, okay? I'm sorry that not to take a break, but I think I have to go around 10 minutes from now. I'm going to repeat the question because it's good for them. If a person is born severely mentally retarded, how can we help those people with their karma? I think there are about three different ways to get people to do good karma. The most difficult and the most powerful is to explain to them what we did this week. You see what I mean? If you really understand why to do good karma, then you'll do good karma much more, with much more, what do you call it, stability and much more. Someone asked the Dalai Lama when I was there, he said, how do we teach our young children? And he said, well, they're not going to listen to what you say, they're just going to watch you. And they'll do whatever you do. So the best way to teach children personally is to be a good person yourself, because that's the hardest way. And then there's a third way where, like with animals, you just, my llama, dog, on the temple, and he's done this for 6 months, and now she'll go to the house, you know what I mean? And I think and then get them to, especially to help other retarded people, is the most powerful karma for a retarded person. So if there's any way to get a retarded child in a situation where they're just making a little toy to help another retarded child, then that's the most powerful karma for that retardation to start to diminish. Just in general, for intelligence, this is an interesting correlation that you might not have guessed. Keeping your morality is supposed to be the best karma for being intelligent. Okay? So, like, if you have problems passing exams or a retarded person, the best karma for intelligence. And they say that a person is really violent, more and more dumb. Okay. There's one I can remember by now. To my llama, and you know, and scholar of Tibet, and they're like, you know, just keeping their morality and keeping bodhicitta, and I've seen that in many. Mind is open to another level, and broken others. But when you don't know, you know, like, what? You know? Anymore or anything, just think it's going to you. Yeah. And it's what?
It's
yeah.
So it's had no time to become and to build your account. I have trouble as to what happens to that bicycle. He put us away because it's died. It's been able to build no new karma and start.
Yeah, I understand your question, I think. You know, karmically speaking, to get to be born as a human is infinitely difficult. So why would someone cross the threshold into a new life, get conceived as a human before they come out? You mean, like, where does that come from? They're on last for a while. That's just very cruel karma problem. Like, many, many stories about King Mohammed, who, you know, went through this extraordinary life, studied under Lord Buddha directly, was a king, and suffered a terrible death, you know, a really horrible death, because the karma wore out. You know, all karma wears out. If it's not done with knowledge, it will wear out. So, yeah, there's many stories like that. There's several books in the Tengger that stop in the middle of a sentence. And they left them that way, and they carved them into the Tengger, and they translated it and left it that way. Why? They wanted you to know that the author died in the middle of a sentence. You know what I mean? And, you know? And it's very... Those guys had good karma. They were writing the Tengger, or translating the Tengger. And it happens. You can't trust them. You have to work hard. I don't think it's wrong. I feel I've done it.
Shouldn't habit arise out of habit? In so far as like it takes us a great deal of good karma to be reborn as a human, and part of that karma would be the habit of creating virtue.
Yeah.
Shouldn't the habit arise again? And in particular, in relation to the Deva realm, it takes great good karma to be reborn as a human.
Yeah, I'll answer the second one first because I kind of more like it. I have an interesting thoughts about it nowadays. Like if how the practice of giving works properly, then you can become quite selfish, you know, in a very selfish way. You know what I mean? If you understand how giving operates and how karma works, you can actually use that to become financially successful. You know, and you know, I think Buddhism would become the world's religion if people got it. You see what I mean? You know what I mean? If people really tried it. It's just a problem of business people on the hopes that they'll get rich and then become Buddhist. I'm not kidding. You know. But there's an interesting thing that happens to you after you get rich. If you keep collecting good karma, you reach a higher level where you are more happy with nothing. You see, it's better, it takes more good karma to be happy without much money than it does to be happy with money. You see what I mean? Like you go through this evolution of broke and not happy, doing good karma and making lots of money and doing more good karma and then you lose all the money and you're more happy than you were before. Even though you have the karma, your karma is so good that you lose your possessions and reach a much higher level of happiness. You see what I mean? And so, maybe that applies to your other question. It's what I would call a lower good karma to be born in a place where they're enjoying things but they're not happy. And then it takes more good karma to get to a place where you don't need things to enjoy and you're happy. See, I mean, it takes more good karma to reach that place, a human realm, and be happy in that sense than it would to be a deva. As far as the karma to... I was just wondering about my boss. You know, he's my boss. I can't judge him. Or take some other diamond dealers who I can judge. Let's say they... you know, like they... I remember one. We were closing a very large deal through Christie's Auction House and the Chemical Bank of New York and the Federal Court of New York, and they asked me to be the, you know, the court witness expert, you know? So they took me down in this vault, and here's this big box of diamonds, and somebody's gone bankrupt. And I said, it's a funny story. I said, I want other banker with me, because half of them are probably fakes. These diamonds have been put up for collateral. And I sat there and I divided them on the spot. I said, this pile is worth about 10 cents. This pile is like the worst diamond I ever saw, you know? And the guy was all, the bankers are all having, because the guy in the bank was, this is all they had left, you know? So they said, what are we going to do with the bankers? I said, I'm here for one of the wives, you know? For nothing, you know? And then, one of the good ones, I said, auction them. So we auctioned them. One guy went to the auction. It's like a huge transaction, you know. And this guy is to be $1. Sorry, it was $5. He refuses to do it. So to embarrass him, I take $5 out of my pocket and I put it on the table and I say, come here, you know? And he goes, come here. And he didn't come out of the lawyers. And then I asked myself the question at that moment. Here's this guy, he's got millions and millions and millions of dollars. So he must have given, he must have been good at generosity in the past. But how come he doesn't have the slightest atom of it left now, you know? So why is that? How can that be? And this logic is that the kind of karma that runs in two or more lifetimes, and the habit of generosity was used up in the last lifetime and the lifetime before that. That's all I can think, you know? That's all I can think of. Also, I can say that, that's the main thing. I think they ripen at different speeds. Okay, and they just ripened at different speeds. So yeah, it's. By the way, that applies to bad deeds, and we talked about it yesterday. It's exactly. And then you have to. You know, you have to be even more about that. That's the I don't cheat people anymore being bankrupt, being broke all the time. I'm even more than normal before. And it's not the amount, it's the willingness to okay. I think we stopped there. I have to run and blackmails. So I'll do a short prayer. I wanted to thank both during the first, especially I don't know where you dug out about that. Did you write that? No. Okay, it's really, really good. Yeah. I think we'll and ice cream especially wonderful and just the people have been so really beautiful to us, and it's so, I mean, it's been more comfortable than most places I go to, and so I'd like to thank you and your staff. And see you at 6 o'clock. You need announcements?
After you leave.
Okay.
You
can
ask people to leave.
Okay. Stick around. Please don't. Come now. Thank you.
One thank very much for the love of ever set the invitation to come to Kathmandu. And please come again.
Thank you for coming. For me, it's very, very, it helps my mind a lot just to talk about these things. Otherwise, I'd be watching movies at the hotel or something. Helps me a lot.